Alex Kane staying with us this morning for just another moment or two. Because, Alex, I want to put to you a comment that the Reverend David McIlvaine told Nolan Live Television last night. This is when we were looking at abortion in Northern Ireland. The legislation, of course, due because of a lack of Stormont Assembly to significantly change on October the 21st. Northern Ireland will go from one of the strictest areas around abortion legislation to one of the most liberal. Speaking on Nolan Live last night, the Reverend David McIlvaine was critical of the DUP's position on abortion. Have a listen to this, Alex.
I would say to the DUP, and I would say to all our political representatives, they need to get in. I think they're really using circumstances to expedite themselves from responsible decisions. And I think it is important that they do get in and enter into an agreement in Stormont that will protect the interest.
Sorry, are you saying that you believe the DUP is trying to expedite itself from the decision around abortion?
I think there's no other way of reading it, unfortunately, because if they were really keen to get into a situation where they will legislate, then there's got to be a greater movement on their part to do that.
The DUP, would say that they're very, very clear on their position on abortion and it has not budged one bit.
I think that is true, but I do also recognise, Stephen, that they have moved away from what I perceive as the biblical interpretation of a pro-life position. Now, that to me is very... This is more than a moral position. This is a biblical position.
Moved away from the biblical position, Alex Kane, trying to abdicate themselves, expedite themselves, sorry, from their... I'd need to try to remember, Alex, exactly what was said. We'll try to get the words, but you get the meaning of that. Some deep criticism there of what the DUP is doing around abortion.
Yes, I can understand why David's saying that, but this certainly reflects not simply what the DUP's original biblical wing of the party, whether the evangelical, I'm not quite sure how they like to be described, but yes, there are people who are still very, very much opposed to changing abortion law here, and also changing same-sex marriage legislation. But David does have a good point, because as it stands, if there's not an assembly by October the 21st, then Westminster, assuming it's meeting and doesn't have a general election, kickstarts legislation. And there are some people say, oh, that does get off an awful lot of hooks. But in getting them off hooks, it makes them look weak to start with. If they get the assembly up to stop it and use a petition of concern, that's going to cause any more problems, Stephen, simply because it's quite likely that Sinn Féin might say, well, stop this, you're going to use petition of concern again. We're going to walk out of this again. So either way, you know, while I understand David's point about how they might expedite this, I'm not sure how they do it easily, because either with an assembly in which they have a petition of concern to stop it or leave it to Westminster where they look weak, there's no easy way of coming out of this. But it is true, this is something they need to deal with, because there is a more... Let's call it secular is overstating it, but at the top end of the DUP, and some of the people who have joined them over the past few years, Stephen, there is a wing of unionism, even in the DUP, who thinks, look, you know, if we're talking about the United Kingdom, if we're talking about equality of citizenship, if we're talking about, you know, this the same fundamental approaches underpinning the entire United Kingdom, then Northern Ireland has to make sure that it doesn't continue to make itself look like a place apart, particularly when we've seen what's happened south of the border, what's happened in the rest of the United Kingdom. That, too, gives them a problem. And they can get away with it, Stephen. They actually can. As long as there's something like Brexit, as long as there's something like a border poll, as long as there's something like a constitutional question, the DUP do not need to worry about this, because people will continue to vote on the orange and green. And yes, it's true. David is right in one sense.
But is he unfair? I've got the words that we heard in that clip. He's accusing the DUP of expediting itself around the decision on abortion. Now, for something which... clearly, many members of the DUP care about passionately. Is he being fair when he says that?
I think he's been fair in how he sees it, Stephen. Simply because it is an issue. If you look at some polling figures within the DUP and so on, there is clearly a very strong element, and not just in the DUP, but across unionism and across nationalism, who are very uncomfortable with anything which makes the changes in Northern Ireland, as he said, from being one of the strictest to one of the most lax. It causes problems for the DUP, it causes problems for Sinn Féin. And yes, Stephen, I can see an argument where it would suit all of the parties to some extent to have this dealt with at Westminster. To sort of pretend, oh no, we're against it, but we couldn't stop it. So But personally, you know, the DUP needs to take this head on at some stage. And I know Sam McBride got attacked by Ian Paisley. I don't care if he attacks, I'd never give a scuff about that. But I'm simply saying, yes, I think in the inner circles of the DUP, they recognise the problem and they know it needs to be dealt with. From my personal point of view, I think it would be better dealing with it in the Assembly, dealing with it in a proper debate rather than allow, which is a hugely important issue for so many people, Stephen. It's better that it's dealt here than somehow it's just passed through a bit of legislation in Westminster, nodded through, and someone you suddenly told them this is not the law. That's not the way to do it.
When you have someone like the Reverend David McElveen and all the heritage and background that he has and an association with the church, when he is accusing the DUP of moving away from the biblical perception of a pro-life position, will they worry about that?
I don't think they will, Stephen, because if you go back to when the DUP was founded, 70, 71, go back to the positions they took through the 70s, through the 80s, even through the early 90s, the DUP has changed entirely. Not that it's a U-turn, it has just changed entirely. The greater number of votes going from 20,000 votes to 300,000 votes. Look at the people who are now involved in it. Look at some of the people who are now advising it. There are liberals in there, Steve. There are secular people in there. There are people who like a drink and so on. There are people who will occasionally swear in certain context. The DUP at the top has changed. The party it has changed. So this notion, and I accept and respect, I like David. I know where he's coming from. But this notion that somehow the DUP is still this biblical, based, Protestant, fundamentalist party that existed in 1950, that is gone. It has not been that party for the last 20 years.
Well, Alex, thank you very much. The DUP told us last night to claim that the DUP has taken the decision to advance abortion in Northern Ireland in order to avoid an Irish Language Act is not just wrong, but ignores the other preconditions. Sinn Féin is placed ahead of a return of devolution. That's what they've said when they were talking about Sam McBride and the whole kerfluffle that there was around that. We'll go back to the DUP and ask them this morning if they want to react to what the Reverend David McElveen has said. Okay, 03030 80 55 55 is the number to call. Marion Woods is from Both Lives Matter. Morning, Marion.
Morning, Steve.
Good morning, and the People Before Profit Councillor Fiona Ferguson. Fiona, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Fiona. Marion, let's start with you. October 21st, it all changes in Northern Ireland.
Yes, and it's very concerning for us that from October 22nd, if the Assembly isn't obviously reconvened by the 21st, there will be no explicit legal protection in law for our unborn children. And we are very concerned about that. We're also very concerned that people may not realise the full extent of this. Obviously, this all happened over the fortnight holiday in July. A lot of people have been coming to us afterwards and saying, what happened? What exactly happened? And they are horrified whenever we actually break down what has happened. And then we place our concerns about what this might mean for the future. The fact that...
What are you telling them it will mean?
Well, first of all, as I said, there will be no explicit legal protection up to 28 weeks. And that is based on the fact that the 1945 Criminal Justice Act set viability at 28 weeks. Now, we know that in GB, viability has then been placed to 24 weeks. But on paper, in law, the only law that we will be left with will be that 1945 Criminal Justice Act. So there is that wriggle room that we do not know what will happen, even if people say, well, viability is 24 weeks now. Our law, the 1945 Criminal Justice Act, sets that at 28 weeks, and it defines viability as such. We also then have concerns about this five-month period where there may be guidance, but there will be no statutory regulatory framework until after a period of consultation. And we don't know what that means. We don't know what that means for location. We don't know what that means for unsafe and unscrupulous abortion providers coming into Northern Ireland. There will be no legal protection for women from those abortion providers. It's very, very concerning for us.
Fiona?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to point out, first of all, that even if this was extremely limited to something as low as 9 weeks, 8 weeks, 7 weeks, something similar to what we have in the South, Marion and her crowd wouldn't care. They don't want to see this at all. So when we hear about no legal protections for women and thinking compassionately about women, I think that it has to be acknowledged that Marion and the pro-life crowd don't want to see this happen at all. So we don't. I don't think that they're the best people to listen to in that kind of arena. But here's the point. They then, by not being happy for this legislation to come in, are saying they're happy for the current law to exist. And what that says is that a woman can go to life for prison for procuring her own abortion. That's what people who defend this law are happy with. They can't ever answer the question, when do we lock her up? While she's still pregnant? Do you wait till you've got the fetus out and then you lock her up? If you're forcing her to carry the child to term, do you put the child in prison with her? It's a ridiculous law. And as we know, it goes against the human rights of pregnant people here. We've been told that by the UK's own Supreme Court. We've been told that by the CEDAW Committee. We've been told that by the UN. And it is right that Westminster, who have responsibility to ensure that our laws are human rights compliant, are making the move now to ensure that no more women have their human rights impeached by this situation, that no more pregnant people find themselves in the back of police cars because they can't have a child at that particular time in their life.
I do need to push back against that, just purely because there is no woman, and it's very concerning that Fiona's framing it in the way that she is, and I think it's really important for people who are listening this morning to understand that there is no woman sitting in a prison right now in Northern Ireland because
you can't quite say that, though, can you? Because women have already been charged, and you know that the week after this is due to come into place, the woman who procured abortion pills for her very young daughter is due up in court. We have an onus to protect that woman, to ensure that no person is up in front of court or threatened with that life sentence for deciding what to do with her own body.
We also have an onus as a society to protect both lives, and that is exactly what our law says right now. Our law, actually, the fact is, our law currently doesn't have a limit, but it is linked to the risk of the life of the woman. And that is key. And it's very concerning for us that some people think, oh, well, you know, a change in the law because women's lives are at risk. Women's lives are not at risk in Northern Ireland because the law says that they are not at risk. Our law protects both lives. It has ensured that there are 100,000 lives being lived today in Northern Ireland.
There is a suspicious aspect of this because you began this show by talking about protecting women, but you don't think that any woman's under danger from this law. You don't acknowledge the reality of what women are telling us when they have gone through this process, that their mental health was brought to breaking point. We've seen the situation of Sevita Halapanavar, who bled out in a hospital because of a similar law to this. Women are in danger.
Okay, I'm really glad that you brought that up, Fiona, because actually we had a woman who contacted us because of the Sevita story. Her story, Hope's story, is on our website. She contacted us very angry because she said, Sevita's story is my story, but because I lived in Northern Ireland, the law protected my life. Exactly the same scenario, but her life.
But Sevita died. Sevita was allowed to die because of the law, and it should have been
Northern Ireland.
Woman's choice.
Not living.
Hold on.
Living in Northern Ireland. In Northern Ireland, the law protects both lives, and the fact is, we are there and we are listening to women. We are listening to women who have been hurt by abortion. We are listening to women who have regretted their abortion. We are listening to women who have been told the lie that actually you can have a baby later on in life, and then they find out later on that they can't. So we have been listening to
that has nothing to do with abortion. And you're not.
Hold on now, one at a time.
However, Fiona does not want to see any protection.
Well, let's give Fiona a chance.
Unborn babies.
Let's give Fiona a chance.
You're not listening to women. There are so many women that have to make that journey every single day, and they are telling you on every social media platform, on every time they gather on the streets to talk about it, every time one of them is brave enough to tell you how traumatic their experience was, you don't listen. And the reality is that you can say abortion is available here for women when their health is in danger. But why do we then have 12 women every day, every week, traveling?
Here's the reality of where we're at. The case that's going through court at the moment of the 15-year-old girl who her mother got abortion pills for her. That's what the background to the case is. After the 21st of October. The reality, and people in Northern Ireland should realise this, whatever side of the debate they're on, the reality is that legislation that would allow a case like that to go to court disappears. There's a void in Northern Ireland.
Well,
for that mother, that it would be dropped. And from the 22nd of October until there is new legislation next March, I think it's scheduled for, there is this void in Northern Ireland.
Absolutely. And crucially, the majority of people here want to see that. The Lifetime survey found that 82% of people wanted to see abortion as a medical issue, not a criminal one. This is a democratic decision. The majority of people here want to see that. They don't want to see their loved ones in the back of police cars or in court cases because of abortion, especially in cases where it was a traumatic.
So Fiona wants to keep on presenting this image to your listeners that there are women in the back of police cars every day, that women's lives are at risk. Can I just go back?
Hold on. Marion's speaking now. Hold on.
Can I just go back to the fact that she talked about the women who are leaving Northern Ireland every day? The reality of this is that 98% of abortions happen for socioeconomic reasons. They happen because healthy women are terminating healthy babies. Now, we have to be real about this. Of course, there are the traumatic and difficult circumstances that are the 2% of cases, but the majority of abortions happen for healthy women terminating healthy babies.
Here's Alex next.
Do you mind if I ask a question then?
No, 1 second. Let's bring in Alex. Morning, Alex.
Good morning, Stephen. I find the whole thing completely bizarre. Is it or is it not better that they have professional abortions than, rather than go up the back street or leave Northern Ireland or go wherever in the world to have something that our democracy isn't allowing? It's a woman's choice at the end of the day. Oh, by the way, the 15-year-old, that obviously is a very exceptional case, and I would have thought there'd be some measures to ensure that that wouldn't happen. That was her mother doing that, not the hospital, was it? Who was doing that? Yeah. Not the. Look, abortions have been going on since time immemorial, and the dictatorship that I'm hearing here isn't believable. It's the woman's choice, is it not? And if it's on religious grounds, well, that's a complete nonsense as well, because she will have to answer for her sins if she believes in the Almighty, that is, to start with. Nobody else has to answer for her, not you, Stephen, not me, not the Queen or the Pope. It's her has to answer for herself. What is the big problem here?
Well, the big problem is that we're talking about life in the womb. And so it's a woman's choice, but the woman's choice to do what? And actually, I would ask Fiona, would she put in any gestational limits? What regulatory framework is it that she's actually asking to see? Because we're very concerned about what that regulatory framework will look at and it will or look like. It will not be legislation, Stephen. It will be regulation. So what does that look like?
Again, you're concerned about any limits. So this full concern about 20, 24, 28, you're concerned about abortion at week one. So you're not really the people who should be speaking about that thing. And neither, for that matter, am I. I think this should be up to medical professionals. What is
the best
medical practice internationally? If we talk about cancer services, oncology services in this city, It's not the churches or our politicians who set what the law is around that. It's best medical practice, and that's what we should have for women here.
030-30-80-55-55. Liam next. Morning, Liam.
Hello, Stephen.
Morning.
Why shouldn't the unborn child have the same human rights as everybody else? If you go into a hospital, you're judged on your heartbeat to be alive or dead. If a pregnant woman goes in to see the midwife, she'll put a monitor on her stomach, and when she hears a heartbeat, she'll tell that mother, your baby's alive. The unborn child's heartbeat starts 22 days after conception. Why shouldn't it have the same rights? I put that to midwives, and I put that to doctors, and they have no argument for that because they have to go against their own judgment of life. It's as simple as that. Pro-choice, talk about choice. They have the choice not to get pregnant. Not the baby's
choice.
Come
on. We're long past those arguments of the 70s and the 80s about promiscuous women. There are many reasons why women fall pregnant out of their control, whether it's access to contraception, whether it's failed contraception, whether it's rape, whether it's incest. You have no right to punish that woman because of the condition that she finds herself in.
And also that pejorative term promiscuous women, it's very disingenuous, isn't it? It's very offensive. To women who will find themselves pregnant for all sorts of reasons and all sorts of life circumstances. Liam, thank you very much. Marion and Fiona, thank you. Good morning to you both.